Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa, and I am so glad you are here with me today. This was such a good interview. I'm talking to Dr. Tracy Gappin all about ED, and this is the most comprehensive discussion I've ever had in just a half an hour, really, all about the kinds of things that go into erectile function and dysfunction, all the kinds of things you can do on your own to improve your health and the trickle-down effect that has to your penis or your partner's penis. And then, if there's still ED, what are the variety of ways that that can be treated? And I mean, he's just a wealth of knowledge. He's got a specialty practice in this. It's going to be coming national for anybody that wants to wait to work with him directly. But anyway, hopefully it's going to be hugely helpful to you. Hope you enjoy it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them, so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So, Dr. Tracy, thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me today.
I'm excited to talk all about ED.
Good stuff.
It comes up a lot in my practice. I know people have questions. So, well, first, can we start with a definition? What technically qualifies as ED, and maybe especially versus something like performance anxiety?
So ED is simply the inability to obtain an erection satisfactory for intercourse. And that is somewhat subjective. You know, for some men, that's, you know, there's a lower bar, a lower threshold to reach than others. But it's simply the inability to have satisfactory intercourse.
Okay. And that's more than one time, right? Isn't it a certain percentage of the time for a certain length of time? I mean, if, you know, one time is not a big deal, right? That's not the end of the world.
Absolutely. I've never seen a man who comes in for erectile dysfunction because he had one single solitary episode of difficulty getting an erection. Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely see it in my sex therapy practice that one time can be enough to get somebody in their head, and then they're worried, and then, you know, then they start to struggle from there. But
I tell you what, I see a lot of that going on where a man may have some issues, and we could talk about some of the causes and management of those issues. But whatever the cause may be, he may have mild ED that's very easy to manage. But then they get into this ugly, vicious cycle. And I'm sorry for jumping ahead, but you brought up a great point that these men will basically create more of a problem with their own psyche. And right. they worry and they have anxiety over performance. And then when they can't perform, now it becomes even worse. And it becomes this ugly, vicious cycle that worsens to the point that if I could just get that guy to have a one decent, good quality, healthy erection, have intercourse and enjoy it, and it's all gone. And so I'm glad that you're doing the work that you are, because the psychological component is certainly a significant portion of it.
Right. What are the various causes of ED? I mean, it can be more than, I mean, there might be one thing going on per person, but there's a variety of reasons people could be struggling, right?
Yeah. I like to categorize it, because I think it makes it easier to understand, into four general categories. And those four general categories are nerves. We need good normal nervous function. You know, the penis is innervated by the pudendal nerve, and you need normal nervous supply to the penis. You need good blood flow, because an erection, after all, is nothing more than increased blood flow to the penis. You need normal hormones. you know, specifically for men, testosterone is a big issue that, you know, testosterone alone is not going to give you an erection in and of itself. But if you have a man who has hypogonadism, you know, low testosterone, then that man's certainly going to have difficulty getting a normal quality erection. And then fourth is the cognitive component that we touched on a little bit already, the psychological part of it, the desire, the, you know, if a guy is stressed from other issues in his life, that maybe sex isn't even on his mind like it should be. And so there's distraction component. So those general four categories, and we could look at, you know, further subset of causes based on those categories. So if you look at nervous, you know, things like pelvic surgery can affect the nerves, prostatectomy for prostate cancer, diabetic men have issues with nerve damage, micro nerve damage from diabetes, guys who have spinal cord injury or who have even, you know, brain issues, brain tumor, Parkinson's. Any kind of neurologic disorder can affect the nervous supply to the penis. A lot of medications cause ED by their effect on the nervous system, especially some antidepressants and some other psychotropics. We can look at blood flow. You know, the most common cause of ED is probably vascular disease or microvascular disease in this case, and it's often a precursor to more significant cardiovascular disease. And so when we see a young man with ED, and we believe that it has a vascular component, then one of the biggest priorities for us is to make sure he undergoes a thorough cardiac evaluation to make sure he doesn't have, you know, cardiac disease as well. So, you know, atherosclerosis from peripheral vascular disease, again, diabetes and hypertension and other metabolic issues can certainly affect blood flow as well. Pelvic surgery, stuff like that can definitely affect blood flow as well. But most commonly, if you had to pick one single thing that's the most common cause of ED in men, it's effect on blood flow. And that typically comes back down to vascular disease of some sort.
Yeah.
And then when we look at hormones, you know, hypogonadism is probably one of the biggest components when we look at hormones. But thyroid can also come into play quite a bit as well. Guys who have hyperinsulinemia from diabetes, poorly controlled diabetes, hypercortisolemia from chronic stress can definitely cause issues as well. And then the cognitive is probably the area that you're probably better served to speak to than I am. So I'll leave that alone.
Well, you know, what strikes me about this, and you know, as a sex therapist, when somebody comes in with ED, I always want them to get I recommend a full medical workup. But so many times people have just been handed a prescription for Viagra and they're, you know, whoever they're seeing, their physician isn't, you know, they're not ruling out that huge long list of conditions you just gave.
What it comes down to is really a big focus in my practice in my men's health center, the Gapit Institute, is, you know, focusing on a systems-based approach to health and recognizing that ED has multiple components to it that we need to address. You can't just give them a pill and think that's going to fix it. Mm-hmm. In our disease model world of Western medicine, in our little 10-minute, 15-minute time slots we have for each patient, that's the easy button. That's the lazy, easy way for doctors to get the guy out the door with something that makes him happy and enables doctors to move on to the next patient, unfortunately. And that's just the way our system is set up.
Yeah.
And so what I emphasize when I work with men is really taking a human systems approach to understanding why and addressing stress. Addressing sleep, which can have a big effect on a lot of the issues we talked about, addressing vascular health, addressing hormones, addressing all these other components to health that ultimately come down to affect erectile function. You know, there are a couple studies that were pretty powerful that showed that by simply adjusting nutrition, we can actually reverse ED in many men. I mean, that's kind of fascinating. By doing nothing more than changing what a guy eats, by reversing his bad eating habits, we can actually reverse ED. It's pretty fascinating. It shows just the power of lifestyle, the power of all these other aspects of our health can affect sexual function.
Was that mostly improving vascular health or blood sugar levels? Or, I mean, across the board, do they know, maybe it's different for different people, but
a lot of it was probably improving glycemic control, helping men lose weight. And when a guy loses weight, you know, that's going to have a big effect on energy, on hormones, on a lot of other factors, you know, cortisol, and those all kind of trickle down to sexual function. So yeah, a lot of different parts there.
Yeah. Okay. So would you also, I imagine you would, but do you also recommend that if a guy has ED, he should really get a fuller evaluation and just don't be just satisfied with handed a prescription?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that because that's really the core of my practice is optimizing men's health. And it's different than the typical urology practice you think of that you go in for diseases and sick care and prostate cancer and kidney stones. My focus is on optimizing men's health and performance by really taking a systems-based approach. And, you know, some people call it holistic. There's definitely some functional medicine component there. But it comes down to understanding that we are a complex network and there's no one simple magic button or magic pill that's going to fix it. And so you give a guy Viagra or, any of those other oral medications, or you give him an injectable medication, whatever the treatment may be, that's just a Band-Aid. You're just treating the symptom. You're doing nothing more than giving him something which is a short-term Band-Aid.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some of the treatment options? I mean, I suppose if you've got an underlying health condition, you've got to deal with that, right? Like mm-hmm. you're talking about stress and sleep and blood sugar and diabetes control.
So when I look at working with men from more of a complex systems approach, I emphasize really six areas of health. It's nutrition, it's sleep, it's mindset and stress, it's hormones, it's detox, and it's fitness. And I can categorize it that way to look at each component of a man's health of how we can improve those pieces to ultimately reach the underlying goal. And so we can look at specific, I think what you might've been asking for are specific treatments for the ED itself, which we can definitely touch on. But I hate to narrow our focus to just that without understanding that we got to take a bigger picture or else we're just really treating it.
Because I guess if you haven't optimized those six areas, you don't really know what your capacity is for erectile function.
Yeah.
Right? Like we want to get all that working first and then see if there's still a problem. Yeah.
I will see on a weekly basis in my practice, a man who comes in and no disrespect, but he's 350 pounds and he's asking for Viagra. And I want to say, are you kidding? Like, and I mean, again, no disrespect intended, but there are much bigger issues we need to address, which are the cause of your ED. So if you just simply want a Viagra and you know, be blindfolded to the main problem here, then we can do that. But I'm not doing him justice in that regard.
Mm-hmm. All right. So how are you, I'm trying to figure out what can fit in this podcast, right? How are you coaching people through some of these six areas, or what are maybe the biggest tips people that are just listening could take away? And then, it won't be the whole course of treatment, of course, but.
Of course. Yeah. And then I could definitely touch for you on some actual ED specific treatments as well, which I'm sure most guys would want to hear about as well.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I focus on that I think is probably most critical is sleep. In general, one of the most underlooked aspects of our health is sleep. And I don't just necessarily mean the quantity of sleep, which certainly is a problem. Most men I talk to, they sleep 5 hours and they say, yeah, I'm fine. I don't need more than that. Well, BS. I'll call you out on that. There's studies that show that it's actually causing damage. And what it does is when you have poor sleep, it's raising cortisol levels. And what does that do? It makes you store fat. It raises blood sugar. It lowers testosterone. It lowers thyroid. And it has a trickle-down effect. And so I can show directly how these things that you think are so incredibly unrelated to ED are intimately tied together.
Wow.
And so when I work with men, you know, you'll see I'm wearing a Garmin watch here, and all the guys I work with will have some sort of wearable device. And I'm not married to Garmin. It could be an Oura or a Fitbit or a Whoop or a BioStrap. It doesn't matter. I want to track their sleep, not just the quantity of sleep, but the quality. And by that, I mean, there are different stages of sleep and certain stages are more important than others and give you restorative function. And so I work with men on how to improve their sleep. And just that alone.
Wow.
A magical difference. Helping them know what's the right food for them. You know, when I work with men, I will often start with a genetic blueprint, a panel, so that I can really individualize and personalize care. So I can tell you exactly what foods you should be eating and which foods you should not be eating. And for some men, keto diet, for example, may be great. For other men, keto is actually the worst thing they could be doing.
Yeah.
And our genetics are really the foundation to understand that. And so it's taking a personalized, you know, data-driven approach that I really have a passion for with men. And oh, by the way, that helps your sexual function as well as your overall health and helps you live longer and feel better and lose weight and look great and all that. So I really like to take a complex approach to it, if you will. If you're looking for just treatments for ED, we can look at that as well.
Well, it would be, is there anything else you want to say about, I mean, there's sleep, there's nutrition, fitness, you said stress, right? Managing stress.
Yeah. So, I love that you're letting me go down that. I don't want to take too much of your podcast. I'm talking about stuff. I was afraid you wanted me to get to the brass tacks. So when we look at stress, you know, it is a huge problem with men where men don't know how to relax. Men don't know how to just take a moment and breathe and be with themselves and have gratitude for the amazing, positive, wonderful things they have in their life. They're just focused on financial concerns, health concerns, job issues, you know, deadlines, whatever it may be. And the men that I work with, when I first meet them, I ask them, you know, well, do you ever meditate? And they're like, well, no, what is that? I don't have time for that.
Right.
And so I really emphasize a couple things when it comes to mindset. One is gratitude. One is mindfulness. So meditation techniques, learn to practice relaxation techniques throughout the day. I emphasize breathing. You know, we in general tend to overbreathe and we tend to breathe through our mouth. And when we do that, what happens is that tends to chronically lower our carbon dioxide levels. Hmm. Well, why do we care about that? Well, what that does is that affects your body's ability to deliver oxygen to the cell. And so it ultimately affects performance in every aspect.
Hmm.
So for your blood hemoglobin to release oxygen at its target tissue, it needs carbon dioxide there for that to happen. And so when you have chronically depleted carbon dioxide levels, that can't happen properly. Why do you get low carbon dioxide levels? From overbreathing.
Huh.
And so we overbreathe when we breathe through our mouth and when we breathe too often. And almost all of us are guilty of that unless we train ourselves otherwise. So I work with men on breathing through their nose all day. Sometimes even taping your mouth is effective. Try for the listeners, try taping your mouth closed for 10 minutes and you realize how uncomfortable it is.
Wow.
And that's okay. And that's because you're overbreathing and you're used to overbreathing and suddenly you're not breathing nearly as much tidal volume and it feels uncomfortable to you, but that's actually where you're supposed to be.
Wow.
So I'm not saying anyone should do that long term, but for short periods of time, test it out. I'm not your doctor. I didn't recommend that.
Right.
And then, you know, the other big part of mindset is I talk about living with intention and really having a purpose. And normally when I'm on Zoom here, you'll see my background is my family, my kids. And when I talk about why, that's my why. I live for my why every day.
Mm.
And so when there's a decision of, you know, when a drug rep brings donuts to the office in the morning and there's a plate of donuts there, I think about, am I going to have that or I have my protein shake? Well, I live with intention. I focus on my why. And does eating that donut really help me get to where I want to be? And does that donut really taste that good? Or is it going to feel amazing later when I'm full of energy and I've eaten the right foods? And so it's a mindset shift of living with intention, living with purpose, focus on your why. And it helps you make the right decisions on a daily basis.
Right.
So all that's around the stress and mindset component of health. That in disease model world, do you think when a guy comes in for ED that any doctor talks about any of that stuff I just mentioned right there? When it comes,
yeah, not enough. That's for sure. Yeah.
And all that has a really profound effect. So we talked about nutrition briefly. We talked about stress. We talked about sleep. You know, fitness, most men tend to not move enough. And I like to really emphasize four components of fitness. It's strength training, actually using resistance, you know, weights if you can, or even body weight if you're just getting started. You need some cardiac, you need some endurance aerobic exercise. You need some low intensity, even just walking and yoga and, you know, 30 minutes of walking a day is amazing. And then finally, stretching. Most men are tight and that leads to injuries when they first try to start exercising. So I really emphasize that fitness is incredibly important for these men, has a profound effect on blood flow as well, which is going to help sexual function too.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know if there's a stat for this, but if people really sort of cleaned up all those areas of their life and they were truly healthy in general, what percentage of ED cases do you think go, I mean, how much of ED does that solve roughly?
If I got guys to optimize their health by focusing on these six areas and made a profound transformation in their health, I would say most men, I'd say over 50% of them easily could have a dramatic improvement in their ED without question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the ones that don't, where they've maybe done all this stuff, right? They've taken it seriously. They've optimized their health and they still have ED. What then are some of the treatment options?
Yeah, sure. So we can now categorize it into Band-Aids. Or we could look at fixing the underlying cause.
Okay.
Regenerative options. So when we look at Band-Aids, we can look at things like the oral medications you mentioned, Viagra and Cialis are the most commonly, you know, thought of medications. There's a few other ones out there as well. They're now generic, so you can pretty much get any of those for fairly cheap prices these days to try out. And so those are short-term fixes. They'll last for anywhere from, 24 to 40 hours, depending on the medication. They will increase sensitivity to sexual stimulation. So fear not, guys, you're not going to suddenly walk around with an erection with these medications. You actually need sexual stimulation. It'll help you perform, and then it'll go down within 24 to 48 hours.
Do those stop working over time too? Do people build up some sort of, not resistance, but I don't know, like, can they expect that that's not going to be a long-term solution?
What I believe, you're absolutely right that men will eventually no longer respond, but it's really because of the underlying health deteriorates and their vascular disease worsens and issues. And so it's that they are chasing their tail, and when they're filling a cup with a hole at the bottom, if they're not taking care of the underlying cause or problem that we talked about, then yeah, it's not going to work.
Okay.
Beyond oral medication, there are medications that we can inject directly into the penis. Mm-hmm. These are injectable, intracavernosal injectable agents. Men may hear them referred to as trimix or bimix or quadmix. That simply means that it's a combination. It's a compounded mixture of a couple different medications. Papaverin, phentolamine, and prostaglandin E are typically the three drugs that we mix together for that. It's kept in the refrigerator typically. If the prostaglandin E is in there, then it needs to be refrigerated. If it's just papaverin and phentolamine, does not need to be refrigerated. And men are taught to take a tiny insulin needle and syringe and draw it up from the bottle. And we teach them how to inject this medication into the side of their penis. And that will give an erection for up to 2 hours.
And that actually generates an erection versus Viagra, which allows you to keep one, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So when you do an injection, you can expect an erection within 5 to 10 minutes. You will be walking around with an erection, whether you like it or not.
Aroused or not, like it's a physical response, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You do not need sexual stimulation to get an erection with these agents. You need to be very careful with dosing. I've seen a number of men in the emergency room who got this medication online on their own and just injected themselves and came in with what's called priapism. And priapism is incredibly painful when an erection lasts for longer than 4 hours. And it's very rare for that to occur with the oral medications like Viagra and Cialis, but it definitely can occur with the injectables if you take too much. Mm. And so I recommend any man out there who's going to try it, be sure you get it from a doctor and that you start at a very low dose and titrate up very slowly.
Okay.
So that's the injectable agents. Those are, again, a Band-Aid that can really give you a temporary erection. It's doing nothing to fix the underlying problem. We can also look at a vacuum pump, which I could argue goes into both categories, both the Band-Aid and the long-term fix. A vacuum pump is a cylinder-like device. The ones that I prescribe are glass, but they can come as plastic or any material. And it looks like a tennis ball can, if you will, a small tennis ball can that goes on the penis, and it has a pump attached to it. And the pump can either be a manual pump or a battery-operated pump. And what it does is it acts like a vacuum, and it sucks blood into the penis, literally has a vacuum effect to create an erection. I will often have men who use the vacuum device also use a constricting band, a band at the base of the penis, to people call it a cock ring. It's basically just a leather strap of some kind that goes to the base of the penis to prevent that blood from now leaking out. Mm-hmm. And that's a non-invasive way to help with erectile function as well. Now, I'll mention briefly that ring that I mentioned, that leather ring that goes to the base of the penis. A lot of men will come in with difficulty maintaining an erection. So they'll mm-hmm. get an erection. Everything's great for the first 2 minutes, and then it goes down. A lot of those guys may have venous leak issues where the blood comes in, but then it instantly rushes back out.
Okay.
And so for them, I recommend one of those rings to actually help with venous compression to help maintain the erection. And that tends to work really well for them.
So that's sort of all they need is, right? Because they can get the erection. Exactly. Let's just close it in there. Yeah.
For some guys, it's just that. Exactly right. Yeah.
Hey, we're taking a real quick break here in the middle of the podcast, and I want to share with you a free resource. If you are in a relationship where sexual desire has been an issue, where one of you wants more sex than the other, where one of you or both of you are struggling to feel desire for sex, this is the training for you. It's a free webinar that you can watch on demand. It's called How to Want Sex More, or Help Your Partner To, without feeling pressure or obligation. In it, I cover the 5 biggest mistakes that keep people stuck, blocked from their sexual desire, and it's going to give you ways to approach this differently to start to create a sex life that's really fun and easy for both people. you can sign up at intimacywithease.com/masterclass. Now, I had heard, I haven't seen an erection created with a pump before, so, but I had heard, is that sufficient for intercourse?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I will have men actually use the pump on a regular basis, even when they're not having intercourse. And this is where we kind of tie into the facing the underlying problem. But when you use the vacuum pump on a regular basis, you're increasing blood flow. You're helping with the smooth muscle in the penis. You're actually training the smooth muscle to function. It's like exercise in the penis. Mm-hmm. And so I will have men do the vacuum pump for 10 or 15 minutes a day, whether they're going to have sex or not. And a lot of times that will have a profound effect just in and of itself. And I think that's because we're now going into the other category, which is fixing the underlying problem. So that's helping improve the blood flow to the penis on a long-term basis. So I love using a vacuum pump for most men who have ED issues. I think it's a great way to stimulate it. They can introduce it into foreplay with their partner as well, so it's not so awkward and clumsy if done properly. And it works. It works well.
I'd certainly heard of it as part of penile rehab after a prostatectomy, that it's important to be getting blood flow to the penis and, you know, for a long time at post-surgery.
Exactly right. Right. Yeah. And I compare this to an ACL repair. My wife tore her knee skiing last year and she had an ACL repair, she wasn't immediately out running marathons. She had to train and go through rehabilitation to train the muscles around it to work properly again. And the same thing goes to ED, where you have to train those muscles how to work again. You got to improve the blood flow, and that takes time and effort. And that's where I think the vacuum pump is really, really helpful. Yeah.
Okay.
And then we could look at some other regenerative treatments where now we're looking at fixing the underlying cause. And again, I'll skip the other systems-based approach stuff that we talked about and focus just on the actual penis treatments that we have. And for that, we look at things like Gaines Wave, which is the low-intensity shockwave therapy, and we look at PRP. So low-intensity shockwave therapy is really the same technology that we use for kidney stones. So shockwave therapy for kidney stones has been around for a long time, and it's a great non-invasive way to treat kidney stones. Because it takes these shock waves and it focuses it at a very specific point under the skin. And with shockwave therapy for kidney stones, we can find the stone with X-ray and localize it and point the waves, if you will, at that location to bust up stones. What they found, studies over the last, maybe 10 years now, looking at shockwave therapy to the penis at very low levels, much lower than what we use for kidney stones, it actually caused neovascularization. Angiogenesis, creation of new blood vessels in the penis. And they have microscopic studies that have shown this, that we believe this is done through stimulating stem cells, stimulating growth factors to produce new blood vessels and improve vasculature in the penis. It's pretty fascinating.
I have not heard that before. Wow.
Yeah, and it's being done around the world. There are numerous companies with devices that are being used for that. That's a whole other conversation of which device to use. For there's some controversy on whether you need a linear or a radial probe to do it. But getting beyond the technical aspects of it, it has been shown to actually improve erectile function by stimulating new blood vessel creation. Now, I will point out that that's not immediate, so you don't get shockwave today and have an erection tomorrow.
And is that regardless of the cause of the ED? Like, I'm thinking, again, of someone who's had their prostate removed might be different than some other cause.
Absolutely. Great question. Yeah, it's typically for vascular etiology. Exactly right. So if a guy has another underlying cause, then it's probably not on the cord nearly as well as if we believe that he has a largely vascular component to his ED. Great question. I would think that a guy who's had a radical prostatectomy is probably not the best candidate for this because of that nerve injury that he has already suffered.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So low intensity shockwave therapy is a really attractive option. It's non-invasive. It is done over multiple sessions and it has the potential to fix the underlying vascular issue that's at the root cause of ED. So studies are still underway. There's a lot of research being done around this field, but it is being done based on several large studies that have shown some really dramatic results. So that's really an exciting regenerative option. The other option has not been studied nearly as much, but really looks promising as well, is PRP. PRP is platelet-rich plasma. And PRP is being used for joint repair. It's being used for hair loss. It's being used for all kinds of other functions. But PRP has been shown to potentially be helpful for improving blood flow as well through stimulation of stem cells, creating a new vasculature in the penis. PRP is, for those who are not familiar with it, it involves drawing your blood, or drawing the patient's blood, spinning it down in a high-speed centrifuge, and it will separate out the red blood cells at the bottom with the buffy coat in the middle, which is the layer of platelets and growth factors. We could take that layer of platelets and growth factors and draw it out, and now we have an incredible medium for stimulating new blood vessel creation, remodeling, if you will, and potential for improving erectile function.
Do you inject that back in? How is this?
Yeah,
how
so is that? Okay. I inject it in five different spots throughout the penis.
Okay.
And that's a one-time setting. So when we do the low-intensity shockwave therapy, that's typically done over 8 to 10 treatments. It's twice a week, one session twice a week for about 4 to 5 weeks. The PRP is one single injection or one single session, one single treatment of five injections at that time.
Do you want to say anything before we move on to testosterone? Do you want to say anything about an implant? Is that even, I mean, I know it's like so like last resort kind of.
And then finally, yeah, you're right. That really, there's a category on its own. I don't like talking about it too much, but I'll briefly mention it, that a penile implant is a surgical procedure where we place an inflatable cylinder-like device in the penis. We put a pump in the scrotum next to the testicle, and that pump can be manually pumped or activated to stimulate saline to go from a reservoir, which is implanted inside in the belly. Saline gets pushed from the reservoir into these cylinders to create an artificial erection. It is basically an erection on command. So when a guy wants to have sex, pumps it up, it's ready to go, does his thing, pumps it down, and is back down to a flaccid state. Sounds amazing, sounds wonderful, sounds too good to be true. Well, it is.
Yeah,
it is too good to be true. You know, the benefits are amazing. The downsides are that you do get a little bit of penile shortening. That's the one thing. There's about a centimeter shortening guys typically experience. It is not a true natural erection. It's different. You don't have the same kind of torque, if you will. I can't explain any better than it just feels different. Some men can also have loss of sensitivity, especially on the tip, for a certain period of time after the surgery.
Yeah. And at that point, you've devastated any ability to have a natural erection too, right? Like this is, that's why I called it last resort.
You're exactly right, Jesse. Yeah. That's right. You cross a bridge that you cannot come back over. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about testosterone then, if that's an underlying cause that is maybe not improved by all the health changes we already talked about.
Yes. So, you know, what I like to say is everyone's talking about the COVID pandemic, but there's no one out there talking about the testosterone pandemic. And I don't know why.
What? Yeah, I haven't even heard the phrase, so please.
It's mine. That's why I haven't heard it.
Okay.
You know, the reason why I say that is we have several large studies in the U.S. and Sweden and Finland that all are longitudinal studies that show over the last 30 years, we have had a population level decline in testosterone levels at about 30%.
Wow.
Free testosterone is down by about 40%. So that means a 50-year-old guy today has a testosterone level that is 30% lower than a 50-year-old man 30 years ago.
Wow.
A dramatic effect. And, you know, we could look at environmental causes as
the I was going to say, is that all the sort of faux estrogen stuff that's in the environment that we're, I mean,
yes,
or maybe we don't know why, but
yeah. So you bring up a great point. So I've actually been on stage. You could look me up on YouTube. You'll find a couple talks I've given on this, on endocrine disruptors in our environment that are crushing hormones. Endocrine disruptors are causing autoimmune disease and obesity and infertility and hormone issues and cancers and all kinds of other health issues. And it is unfortunately a real challenge to avoid them because they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, plastic water bottles is the most common culprit. We as a population go through 1 million water bottles a minute on this planet. And most of those are not recycled. And those plastic water bottles, they emit BPA and phthalates into your water. And we have studies that show that very low levels of these chemicals castrate you. Mm. There's a frog study where these frogs were exposed to very, very low levels of atrazine and they got converted to female.
Wow.
These male frogs became female and actually laid eggs and reproduced. It's scary.
Wow. Yeah.
And so it's in our food products. It's in our packaging containers. It's in the plastic water bottles. It's in our K-cups. It's in our household cleaning products. It's in our personal care products like shampoo, deodorant, cologne, soaps, sunscreens. So another part of when I mentioned those six areas of health, one of them is detox. I spend a lot of guys working with men on those, household products that they use and how can we minimize exposure to these toxic chemicals. So I really do believe that the chemicals in our environment, and that includes all the things that I mentioned, are a profound reason why testosterone levels have plummeted. Hmm. And also, I'll mention briefly as well that fertility rates have dropped by a similar rate.
Wow.
If you look at the curves are almost identical looking at testosterone numbers and fertility. And we believe that there's a direct correlation there because of the effect on testicular function.
Wow.
Which is the underlying problem. So I see men every day with low testosterone. It's become such a huge problem. And it's not just about sex. You know, we're here today talking about sex, but it's about energy, their sense of vitality, their confidence. They're feeling like they're a man, their bone health, their weight, their cognitive function, and even longevity. Studies have shown that guys with low T don't tend to live as long. So it has a profound effect on health that goes really way beyond just erections and just libido.
So what do people need to know about managing this, increasing their T levels? What, you know, do you, is it always about supplementation or what's...
Come see me.
It's complicated. Is that the answer to that?
Yeah. You know, and again, this goes back to when we start our conversation with Viagra, you know, the easy button, the easy thing to do for a doctor who has this 10-minute time slot with that patient is just here's your testosterone and I'll see you in 6 months. And there are a lot of nuances to that, to optimizing hormone health. There are a lot of nuances that would be tough to really focus on here on a podcast, but suffice it to say that it goes way beyond just simply giving testosterone injections and that there is somewhat of an art to it. And, you know, there are other hormones as well. So when I see a guy with low testosterone, he will almost invariably have issues with thyroid as well. For example, DHEA, vitamin D, we can look at melatonin and it's a profound effect on areas of health beyond just sleep. And so it's taking a bigger picture view of hormones in as well, and not just giving you an injection every week.
Yeah. And again, circling back, I assume making all those health changes might impact T levels just by itself.
Yeah.
Right.
Then
you've got to take a detailed, individualized look at somebody's health to know how to help them with low T if they still have it.
Okay. There's a great study out of Colorado. They took some college students from Colorado and they had them go through sleep deprivation for a couple nights. After one night, these boys' testosterone levels dropped by 50%.
Wow.
One night of sleep deprivation. And so there are a lot of factors at play. Yeah.
If you don't mind, talk a little bit about how people can see you. You told me before we started this, you're in Florida. So is this people should just take vacation and come see you down there? Like,
that'd
what
be
are
great.
The.
Yeah, come on down. So I actually do a lot of telemedicine. So any listeners can reach out to me. We'll figure that out. I have a brick and mortar practice here in Sarasota, Gappin Institute for Men's Health and Performance. I am going to be launching. I'm going to keep the details a little quiet for you, but I'm soon to be launching a national men's personalized telehealth business as well.
Okay,
that will be coming out soon. It'll be called Male VIP. You will learn more about it soon, but that's going to be coming to the whole U.S. as a way to really implement what I just shared with you today, to share that at a national level, to be able to scale that and really help men who are suffering through this this men's health crisis and what I call a testosterone pandemic.
Yeah. Okay. And then do you want to just quickly say where people can find you online too?
Sure.
So they can be on the alert for when the Male VIP comes out?
Sure. My website is drtracygappin.com. That's drtracy, no E in there, gapin.com. And I have an offer for your listeners. My book is called Male 2.0, Cracking the Code to Limitless Health and Vitality. And I have a free copy for your listeners.
Great.
They can go to drtracygappin.com/limitless and get a free copy of the book.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time and expertise. This was wonderful.
Absolutely. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.